You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Blue Friday episode, Nick Lee. The actual Senior Bowl game is coming up on Saturday in Mobile, Alabama. We're going to wrap up our coverage today, a defense-heavy episode. We're going to be looking at everything from defensive tackles and defensive ends all the way back to corners, safeties, and, of course, those hybrid defenders that are so important in today's modern NFL. Now for your lead stories here on Locked On Seahawks. It's actually a pretty quiet Friday on the Seahawks front, but a couple of noteworthy developments with the roster as well as the coaching staff. Our good friend Ben Arthur with the Seattle PI had a photo of Jaron Reed that came off of his Instagram that indicated he underwent surgery on Thursday. It's all speculation at this point. There's a lot of mystery behind this because we don't have any idea at this point. No reports have surfaced what Jaron Reed had surgery on, but Nick, we do know that he had a couple of minor bumps and bruises over the course of the 2020 season.
Yeah, he had several issues bugging him. He had that chest issue that cropped up, his oblique strain at the end of the season. So it could be a few things. A knee was bugging him as well, so it could be any of those three things or something else. We don't want to go towards the TMZ side where, like, we take all this off of a social media post and run with it too far. But, you know, clearly something's going on. And whatever it is, he's getting something cleaned up. And we don't really know, have any idea, recovery of the timetable. You know, the team hasn't said anything. Coaches haven't said anything. But it always brings – when things like this happen, you kind of start to think, okay, what's his future with the team? And with Jaron Reed, obviously he had that really, really strong season 2018, 2019 kind of – fell off the rails a little bit with that suspension and really couldn't get back in the groove of things. And I thought in 2020 for a decent chunk of the season had a pretty solid year, 6.5 sacks, 14 quarterback hits, both of those second most in his career, and played all 16 games. But yeah, clearly wasn't healthy or 100% in those games. So give him credit for playing through those. But this calls into question, Corbin, his future with the team. His contract there is a team option before the 2021 season, where the Seahawks could cut him and save about $9 million off the cap for 2021 without a dead cap until the new league year starts. So this is a lot of stuff where, you know, the cap is tight and you don't know how healthy he is. So this is kind of a cloudy situation right now.
Yeah, we've talked about this contract situation for Jaron Reed a few times already this offseason because the Seahawks don't have a lot of cap space to work with, and he's going to have a cap hit that's close to $14 million under his current contract. And so there's been a lot of speculation that maybe the Seahawks may consider trying to trade him. The extension is also a possibility. You know, I think that there's a number of players we've mentioned that could be up for extensions that would help provide some instant cap relief for the Seahawks as well. So that's a possibility, especially when you consider Reed had 2 sacks in their playoff game. He was one of the stars for the Seahawks in that playoff game. He really took off once Carlos Dunlap arrived. And the issue is going to be, can you keep both of those players? They both have cap hits around $14 million. You're going to have to do some maneuvering with those contracts to be able to retain them. And so certainly Jaron Reed's future is something that's up in the air. If I had to make a prediction right now, I think he'll be in a Seahawks uniform in 2021. But they're going to have to do something with his contract. They're going to have to extend him, do some type of a restructure to lower that cap hit. And they're going to have to do that with a few other players too so that they can continue the rest of their offseason planning. And a lot of teams are in far worse situations than Seattle because of the lowered cap from the pandemic. But certainly this surgery is something to keep an eye on. And if we find out what he had an operation on, if that becomes reported, if it comes to light what he had surgery on, then certainly we will be revisiting this topic on a later episode. One other news story of note on the coaching staff, Sanjay Lal, who was hired last March. So we're talking 10 months where he was employed with the Seahawks. He is leaving the coaching staff after 1 year as a senior offensive assistant. He was the one notable addition that the Seahawks made to their staff. A ton of experience as a receivers coach in the NFL. He was with the Colts, the Raiders, the Jets. He's bounced around, but he's considered a high-quality receiver coach. And a lot of people that I've talked to with connections to the building over the last 24 hours think that this is a significant loss for the Seahawks to have to fill because of his receiver background. He did a lot of good work with Seattle's receivers, including DK Metcalf last season. He's going to Jacksonville. He is going to follow Urban Meyer to Jacksonville and going to take over a coaching position there. I believe he's just going to be the receivers coach as he's been at most of his other NFL stops. I think this has a lot to do with Brian Schottenheimer's departure, because I think the big reason Lall ended up in Seattle to begin with, he and Schottenheimer coached together on the Colts staff before Schottenheimer was hired by the Seahawks. And so I think that connection now not being there, it didn't make sense from Lall's perspective to still stay in Seattle. So now he's going to join Urban Meyer's staff. And maybe this creates a situation where Shane Waldron, the new offensive coordinator for the Seahawks, can bring in a senior offensive assistant that fits more with the offensive scheme that he is going to be trying to run in Seattle.
Yeah, obviously, excuse me, what Lall did with the receivers this year was pretty significant, and Metcalf taking an extra step after a really strong rookie season and becoming a Pro Bowl receiver, and Tyler Lockett right behind him as well. And I think that Sanjay Lall has a lot to do with that. So good on him, and good luck to him in Jacksonville. Yeah, you're going to need it with Jacksonville, what they got building there. And yeah, Shane Waldron's going to bring in his own guys. And I think that's probably a good thing to give your offensive coordinator a bit of wiggle room as far as bringing in guys, plucking guys from other places where he can kind of put his own system in there. And I think that's a healthy thing to do. And just to kind of cut ties and start fresh with the new offensive coordinator, who he wants to bring in, because if he works well with the guys he brings in, obviously that can only help the offense and installation and getting a rapport with the players. So yeah, you'd like to think that Shane Waldron will look for his own guys. And I think that'll be in the end a net positive for the Seahawks.
That'll be something to keep an eye on here in coming weeks, because the Seahawks have yet to officially announce Waldron as their offensive coordinator. Right now, it just seems like it's a formality. The team just hasn't come out with an official announcement. I would expect in coming days that that's going to happen. And once Waldron is officially on staff, then I would expect there are going to be a few other coaching changes, adding some coaches onto the staff that fit with Waldron and what he's going to be trying to do here in Seattle. So we'll just have to wait and see. Coming up next in the second quarter, continuing our Senior Bowl coverage, today is a defensive-centric episode. We're going to start off looking at defensive backs and linebackers, so your corners, safeties, inside and outside linebackers to watch in Mobile, Alabama. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. You're one of a kind, and so are your taxes. That's why TurboTax Live has experienced tax experts who are ready to listen to you, learn about your unique tax situation, and help you get the best tax outcome. Maybe you're moonlighting as a rideshare driver and have questions about what qualifies as a deduction. Maybe you want an expert to walk you through the process, since most of your income last year came from freelance jobs. Maybe you'd like to hand the whole tax filing process off to an expert while you perfect your banana bread recipe. Whether you want to file with the help of an expert or let an expert do the filing for you, TurboTax Live experts are here to help, giving you the confidence to know that your one-of-a-kind, uniquely you taxes are done right. Intuit TurboTax Live.
As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited. Until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. It's Blue Friday. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get your daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get your podcasts. The Senior Bowl has officially wrapped up practices. Their third and final one concluded on Thursday. They get Friday off, and then Saturday, it's game action. All of the top seniors and early graduates are going to have an opportunity to showcase themselves in a game scenario for scouts, coaches, executives, you name it, a real chance to make some money and improve their draft stock. Let's talk defensive backs and linebackers now. We'll start at the cornerback position. I think you and I would both agree with Shaquille Griffin heading towards free agency, as well as Quentin Dunbar, that the corner position is going to be one that the Seahawks have to be watching very closely right now at the Senior Bowl and throughout the pre-draft process.
100%. And I wrote a piece on this the other day that, you know, the cornerback position definitely is in flux in Seattle. I really like what the Seahawks got from DJ Reed. I think there's something there, and Trey Flowers will be there for another year as well. But yeah, you have your arguably your top corner in Griffin, and a disappointment, but still a talent in Quentin Dunbar leaving as well. And you'd like to think that Griffin can come back on a return deal, but that is not a guarantee. So I think the Seahawks definitely need to take a long, hard look at the corners in this Senior Bowl. And let's start out, Corbin, with a familiar last name here. I'm going to butcher his first name. Is it Ifeatu Melifonwu out of Syracuse? I think that's a cornerback that will catch some eyes. He's kind of one of those rangy, toolsy, physical cornerbacks, and at the next level, at the NFL level, you know, he might project more as a man press corner. He makes plays physically in coverage and against the run. He has, I believe it was his brother Corbin that played out of UConn and actually kind of has some similar traits.
Yeah, the two of them do have similar traits, but I think that the younger brother here is a much more polished player coming out of Syracuse. And that's a good thing, because his brother, Obi Melifonwu, had issues when he entered the NFL as far as being extremely raw. He got cut pretty quickly into his NFL career, and things just didn't work out. He was really just a traits-based corner. I see more polish and more development in Ifeatu Melifonwu. I see a lot more polish in his game. He's a guy that didn't have a lot of plays on the football at the college level necessarily, just modest production, but he's capable. There have been flashes on the film where he's been able to take advantage of his length and get his hands on the football. Receivers can trick him sometimes with double moves. I think that's maybe the biggest area he's got to improve. Overall route recognition, that's an area that he must get better at the NFL level. Whoever drafts him, that's going to be a big development point. He ends up in no man's land sometimes just for that reason, but I really like him as a man press cover corner because of his size, his length. He's athletic. He has the range. He just has to improve his route recognition skills. Another corner that I really like in this group that, again, you don't have much ball production, did not have a single interception in his college career playing at Michigan as well as Minnesota. He transferred after one season at Michigan to join the Golden Gophers. So some Big Ten crossover there, but that's Benjamin St. Juice. And he's 6'3", close to 6'4", 200 pounds. So he's got that length that Pete Carroll loves on the outside, just at that 32-inch arm threshold, a little over an 80-inch wingspan. And he is a guy that will come up and make plays in the run game. He's physical. What I haven't seen enough from him, though, in the film, I have some concerns maybe a little bit about his overall athleticism, particularly his speed. He is a guy that makes up for it because he's able to swing his hips open. He's got great recognition skills. And so a little bit different than Melifonwu in that regard. But again, no interceptions. He did have 10 passes defensed during his first season with the Golden Gophers. This year, the Big Ten basically played a five-game season, so didn't have a lot of opportunities. But he's a capable tackler. I think he's somebody that hasn't played a lot of football at the college level, so there's a lot of room to grow. He's going to be somewhat raw, but I think both those corners would make a lot of sense in Seattle's system.
Yeah, obviously the physical traits are there. The measurables the Seahawks typically like are there. As with St. Just, you know, it is limited action. 18 games in the last 2 years. He did play a little bit as a freshman in 2017 before redshirting in 2018 with Michigan. What the reality with the Seahawks is, where they are in the draft, they're going to be looking at a lot of project guys, a lot of traits guys, a lot of guys that have upside. I know that's a dangerous word in this business, but really that's going to be where they're looking at. And Corbin, I want to move on to safety here. And we were talking before the show, and first off, I'm thinking when the Seahawks are looking at safety, I think that they need to consider kind of a complement to Jamal Adams. You know, more Earl Thomas and less Cam Chancellor, for so to speak. But this first one that we're going to talk about has maybe the best name in sports. Not just college football, in sports. Divine Diablo. And if you don't know what Diablo means, devil in Spanish. Divine Devil. Divine Diablo. I mean, that's such a great name for a defensive player, too, like Diablo and, you know, Dark Visor and, you know, he can do the whole bit. That'd be great. He's a guy at Virginia Tech who has, we both can agree, the measurables, the size, 6'3", over 225, 32¾-inch arms, almost an 80-inch wingspan. I mean, he's been pretty productive, 4 picks this year. So really, he becomes very attractive, if not just for his frame.
Yeah, I look at Diablo as a player that if they didn't have Jamal Adams, they would be extremely intrigued by, because you may remember Cam Chancellor played at Virginia Tech, and Divine Diablo is a very similar build, being around 6'3½ at 225 pounds. Not as physical of a presence, not as consistent of a tackler, not going to necessarily come up and bring the hit sticks that Cam Chancellor did, at least with consistency. But he does have the size, he has the length, and he's a former wide receiver. And so that is the background that has allowed him to be able to make plays in the football. He didn't have a lot of interceptions until this season, and he picked off 4 passes. So he really broke out to an extent in that regard for the Hokies. Obviously great size and ball skills. My concern with him, we got to see what his pro day looks like when Virginia Tech holds that. How does he run? Because when I watch him on film, I see a guy that's a little bit of quicksand feet. He doesn't look to me like somebody that is going to offer much as a deep coverage safety. He's going to be more of that linebacker role, that money linebacker that we see teams that are using. And Seattle already has Jamal Adams. So unless you're picking him to be a special teams guy, or heaven forbid, somehow you end up in a position where you're not sure Jamal Adams is going to be part of your future, I don't think that's going to be the case at all. But I don't see Diablo being a guy that they're going to be overly interested in just because they have limited draft capital. And he's a player that really is going to be repetitive in a lot of different skill sets. I think with having Ryan Neal coming back too, there's not a lot of value necessarily there, but certainly he would fit on special teams, and he fits what they look for at that strong safety position. So you never can have too much depth. We know Pete Carroll likes the competition, so he's the guy at that safety position that, at least from what Seattle's typically drafted, stands out to me.
Another guy real quick that I think that the Seahawks might take a look at is Hamza Nasirildeen. I'm so sorry if you're a Seminoles fan and I butchered that name out of Florida State. He's played everywhere for Florida State. I think that's the versatility is almost a necessity these days, especially at the safety position. He's played single high, two deep, slot defender, down near the line of scrimmage. He's got that combo of size and athletic ability to make him functional in just about any role you want him to. And what I think sticks out to me is he's a tackling machine. As a junior at 2019 in Florida State, he had 101 tackles at the corner position, at the safety position. So that's a pretty significant number to me. 2 interceptions. So that's another guy I think that they might take a look at as another guy that they can maybe plug and play a couple spots.
Let's talk linebackers now. And obviously the Seahawks have used like 80 draft picks on linebackers the last 2 years. So I would be really surprised if this is a position where they are looking to pick anyone, but there are a few mid to late round linebackers in this class that could make some sense, especially if KJ Wright leaves in free agency. Jordan Brooks is obviously going to be your weak side linebacker, but then at that point, if they let him walk, it might not be a bad idea to look for a linebacker that could fill that Sam linebacker position.
Yeah, and I think the Seahawks, much like with corners, I think they're always looking for linebackers. I just think that's a Pete Carroll thing. One of my favorite guys in the Senior Bowl linebacker-wise is Jabril Cox out of LSU. I like the fact that he's a North Dakota guy, North Dakota State guy who, you know, they typically win national championships at North Dakota State, but he decided to take his game to the next level, the SEC, and his game translated. He played very well. He was actually a semifinalist for the Butkus Award. 3 interceptions, 6.5 tackles for loss, a sack, a good tackler in space. I watched really closely. I watched just about every snap of the Florida LSU game for my own selfish purposes. I was rooting for Florida, but disappointing result for the Gators. But much of that was because of the defense. And Jabril Cox actually had 3 quarterback hurries against Kyle Trask in that game alone. And he's actually got a very large frame too, 6'4", 230 plus. So there's another guy that you can put him up deep or up against the line of scrimmage and take on those heavy workloads with blocks and in the run game. And also, I think he's athletic enough to work out in space in the pass game as well. So if they were to look at linebacker, I think Cox should be upwards toward the top of their list amongst those playing in the Senior Bowl.
I'm going to go with Chaz Surratt out of UNC as the linebacker from the Senior Bowl class that really intrigues me. Former quarterback, he was recruited by the Tar Heels as a QB, and then he got hurt. He injured his wrist, and when he came back, this was before the Tar Heels made the coaching change and went to Mac Brown, but there was a discussion between the coaching staff and the player, and he just wanted to play, and so they transitioned him to defense, and he played linebacker, and 2019 was the first season that he played there regularly on the field, and he's 6'2", around 227 pounds. He racked up 115 tackles and 6.5 sacks to go with 10 quarterback hurries in his first year. He was a runner-up for defensive player of the year in the conference, and he was a first-team All-ACC. So this dude is talented. I mean, he might go earlier than expected just because he's so raw, and yet you saw improvements this year in his ability and coverage. That was the biggest issue for him his first season at linebacker, but he's clearly got the athleticism. He can run sideline to sideline. He can rush the passer. We've seen that. And so you're looking at the Sam linebacker spot. You put a guy like this at Sam linebacker in Seattle scheme, the flexibility he gives you as a potential blitzer, he can play the run, have him set the edge some. I would be intrigued by him. He would be one linebacker in this class that I could maybe say, I know we picked a bunch of linebackers, but this guy would be a really good fit at that Sam linebacker position. When we come back for the third quarter, we're going to go up to the big and heavies, the defensive linemen, defensive ends, and defensive tackles as we continue our Senior Bowl preview. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Even though the Super Bowl is 2 weeks away when the Buccaneers battle the Chiefs, there's plenty of other sports action on tap. College basketball and the NBA are heating up, and baseball's right around the corner. Tons of crucial sporting events are on tap in coming weeks. There is only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee for our Blue Friday show. Coming up next week when we return on Monday, we're going to return to our Monday mailbag segment, and Rob Rang and I will be sharing some takeaways from Saturday's Senior Bowl matchup. Looking forward to that. Let's talk defensive line now for this Senior Bowl, Nick. And the defensive end position, maybe not near as big of a need for the Seahawks as it has been in recent seasons, especially if Carlos Dunlap is retained. We don't know what's going to happen on that front. But there are some intriguing defensive ends that should be available late day two into day three that the Seahawks could consider with one of their 4 draft picks.
Definitely. And we got to realize as well, the Seahawks are going to have kind of a de facto acquisition in Daryl Taylor, hopefully a healthy one in 2021. But the first guy I want to talk about is Taron Jackson. And the only 2 bad words to come out of BYU's 11-1 season, my Cougars, the 2 words are Coastal Carolina. I prefer to erase that game from memory, but Taron Jackson had just a great season and really was helped in disrupting BYU's perfect season. And that was the game I obviously watched the most of Coastal Carolina, but before BYU and Coastal Carolina squared up in that weird two-day notice kind of game, the first thing I read about Coastal Carolina is Taron Jackson. I mean, he's 18 sacks the last 2 years. He's what we talked about before the show. He's big. He's not like cut or lean, and he's not fat. He's kind of that in between where he's thick. He is
a brick house. We'll just stick to it that way. But he, yeah, we're talking around 275, maybe 280 pounds at 6'2". I mean, he is a block. So trying to move him is not easy for an offensive lineman. And I've been talking this kid up for months. I just started randomly watching a Coastal Carolina game early in the season. This is before they were swooping up the rankings into the top 15. But I just – it's one of those dudes you just instantly – you zoom in, you're like, okay, that does not look like a guy that would play for Coastal Carolina. He looks like an SEC defensive end, and he is a monster. As you mentioned, the 18 sacks the last 2 years, he's going to have to improve his pass rushing repertoire. I think he's been very reliant on winning with power, and against Sun Belt competition, he obviously has been able to do that. Clearly, the skills and traits are there. Physically, he is way more athletic than he would look in terms of upfield speed and stuff, but he adds a few pass rushing counters off of his bull rush. I think Taron Jackson could be one of the big steals of the 2021 NFL draft, and I think he's got the versatility to play either end spot in Seattle's 4-3 scheme.
Well, and you got to – I'm going to, again, go back to the BYU game. Left tackle for BYU, Brady Christensen, probably should be a day two pick in the NFL draft. Arguably could sneak into the first round. I don't think that's going to happen. But and he Jackson gave Christensen all he could handle. And he's
just a monster.
He's just a monster. So, yeah, I would love – he has Seahawks written all over him. I wish that they could maybe – that he'd follow the Seahawks. We'll have to see.
Yeah, he's a guy that I've been very intrigued by for a long time. I'm going to throw another name out there. Carlos Basham Jr. from Wake Forest, so a little bit bigger school, the Demon Deacons. And he's another big-bodied end. We're talking a 281-pound base defensive end. So he would be another guy that you could put in there with LJ Collier and Rasheem Green. We have to remember, Rasheem Green's entering the final year of his rookie contract. And so the clock's ticking a little bit there. Is he going to be able to prove he's worth bringing back? If not, LJ Collier is still going to have a couple years left in his contract, but it would be good to have another base defensive end in there that you can develop. And he's not going to beat you with speed. He's not going to win with finesse, but he's an excellent power rusher, and he's really technically refined. And unlike Jackson, he's got some counter moves. Like I said, he's a refined player, and he's got really solid physical tools as far as using his hands at the point of attack, getting off blocks. My big concern with him is his play awareness against the run game as far as maintaining his fits and stuff. That can be problematic at times. He's going to have to show growth there, or you don't play for the Seattle Seahawks. But I certainly think the potential's there for him to be a very solid run defender if he's coached up. Clint Hurd is one of the best in the business. So Basham is a guy that I think would look nice bashing opponents in the NFC West.
That's a good name for T. Lemon for sure. And 19 and a half sacks in 3 years, 7 forced fumbles the last 2 years. Pretty productive there for in the ACC against some really, really good competition. Moving to the interior, a guy that I've somehow, some way, for some reason, watched a lot of Tulane this year. I don't know why. I mean, it's not that I don't like them. It's just whenever I turn on the TV and not a lot of the games are on, Tulane was the game that was on. And Cameron Sample, number 5, the interior lineman, was one guy that stood out to me. The guys that have the high motors, the athletic, I love the defensive linemen that, you know, on a screen play or a cutback on the run or quick slant, all of a sudden they're making tackles 8, 9, 10 yards downfield on the opposite end of where they were lined up. And Cameron Sample did that several times. So he has that cliche motor that you always like to see from a D lineman. And 10 and a half sacks in 3 years, pretty good for the interior, played everywhere, really. Pretty versatile. He might project better as a true 4-3 defensive end, but I just like his motor. I like his productivity, and I just like that he's versatile. So he's another guy that jumped off the tape to me watching an abnormal number of Tulane games.
Yeah, I actually haven't really gotten a chance to watch Cameron Sample. I'm the opposite. Every time I turn the TV on, Tulane was not on my television. So must have just been the certain time that I chose to watch college football. But he is certainly a guy that I'm going to have to read up on a little bit here and watch some film on. But I'm going to stick local. I'm going Washington here. with a player that opted out of the 2020 season. So it's been over a year since we've seen him on the game field. He did play this week at the Senior Bowl, participated in the practices, and that is Levi Onwuzurike. And we're talking about a 6'3", 290 pounds. We're right in the wheelhouse for what the Seahawks like for their three-tech position. And what immediately jumps out when you watch this kid on tape is his initial first step, his quickness. He is an outstanding athlete at that position. He's a really sound run defender as well. He plays disciplined up front in the trenches. Maybe a guy that you could even use some like they did with Jaren Reed this year where he plays some five-tech. But I think his future in the NFL, he fits a 4-3 scheme as that three-tech defensive tackle that can do some damage as a pass rusher. Never had more than 3.5 sacks in a season at Washington, but he's a capable pass rusher that can collapse the pocket. He'll rack up tackles for a loss as well with his quick penetration. So you couple him in there with Jaren Reed and Puna Ford, and Cedric Lattimore is a player that I'm very excited about going into the 2021 season. You could have a really good-looking defensive tackle group with a lot of athleticism, pass rushing ability, and penetration ability. So Onwuzurike would be a player that I think should absolutely be on the Seahawks radar.
Yeah, he's got that good combo of quick lateral movements and also a good anchor. So yeah, just your prototypical dream 4-3 guy. If he
great
if
leverage
he,
as well.
Yeah, leverage. So if he really plays up to his potential, a good 4-3 option moving forward, definitely. And Corbin, let's move to the final one here. The position in quotes that has become exceedingly popular in the NFL and around football in general. The hybrid position, you know, the tweeners. That's kind of a negative connotation, but really they are necessary in this day and age where you have tight ends that run like wide receivers and wide receivers that are built like tight ends. And it's just all running backs that are built like tanks. So my first guy for the hybrid position is Shaka Toney. So if you were unfortunate enough to find Penn State on your television screen this year.
Which is weird saying that.
Yeah, it is very weird saying it. It's a quality program. I hope they turn it around. Shaka Toney was the guy for me that stood out. It was kind of easy to stand out for the Penn State Nittany Lions this year, and he did. Good character, high motor, and you kind of know what you're getting from a Penn State defensive end or you know, pass rushing guy. You know, you had Yetur Gross-Matos last year. Just good character guys, good motor. You know they're well coached. They can do a lot with his frame, I think. I think that's what's the most attractive to me is he's 6'3", 250. So maybe you slim down or maintain, build a bit more muscle, and he's got that Leo or outside backer, or gain a little weight and anchor down his defensive end. Really productive, 20 sacks, 28.5 tackles for loss the last 4 years. So Tony's my guy that jumped out to the off the page in a pretty bad Penn State team.
Yeah, I this is going to sound really cheesy. Part of me wants him to be drafted by the Bengals so we can hear Tony the Tiger references. I don't know why that just popped in my head. But anyway, my hybrid is Quincy Roche out of Miami. He actually started his college career with the Temple Owls. And in 2019, he had 13 sacks for the Owls. And so he was one of the country's best pass rushers. And he was a graduate transfer, ended up at the University of Miami. And the numbers didn't translate playing into the ACC. So tougher competition, not near as many sacks. He was still a threat. You could still see the athleticism, and he uses his hands really well off the edge. So that offsets the fact that I do have some concerns about his length working against NFL offensive linemen, but he compensates that with his hand technique, his overall fundamentals. He's got some solid pass rushing moves to go with his athleticism. At 6'3", 243 pounds, he's kind of that tweener build that we've talked about before. He's a little bit light in the lower body, but still is a capable run defender. He plays with physicality. And my big question with him is going to be where he ends up fitting because of that tweener build. In Seattle, he could be a Sam linebacker. He's got the athleticism to do that. I wonder if the coverage skills are necessarily going to be there, but he could play that role kind of like what the Seahawks have used Bruce Irvin in the past. It's a different situation than KJ Wright playing Sam linebacker. He could maybe play your Leo position as well. You get a little more weight put on his body. He could be a really good NFL pass rusher from that Leo position. And so, again, I don't think edge rusher is necessarily going to be a top priority, but if there's a player like Quincy Roche available in day three, then absolutely John Schneider and company are going to be looking at that, especially with Darrell Taylor coming off the injury that he missed the entire 2020 season with. You want to have some insurance there, and he can never have too many athletes rushing off the edge. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Nick at Nick Lee 51. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. Just check out our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Make sure to leave a review as well. When we return on Monday, we'll be tackling your questions in our weekly mailbag segment. And of course, Rob Rang and I will be sharing some thoughts from Saturday's Senior Bowl contest in Mobile, Alabama. Enjoy your weekend. Stay safe, stay healthy, wear a mask, go Hawks.